Audio Visionen, der Podcast zu Film, Musiken, Sounds.
Well, you know, film is, I see it as a form of literature. It's like opera in a way. It's kind of like our modern day temple of stories. And a good score ultimately is a member of that story that you're telling.
Herzlich willkommen zu Audiovisionen, dem Podcast zu Film, Musiken, Sounds. Mein Name ist Franziska Kollinger und ich freue mich sehr über meinen heutigen Gesprächspartner, den US-amerikanischen Komponisten Jeff Beal. A warm welcome, Jeff. Nice to have you here.
Lieblingsfilmmusiken.
Jeff, in your opinion, what characterizes a good score?
My goal always with a piece of music, with a film score, is to add something that isn't already there. So I often use the phrase a film score that's a character. And that means that it is like another person taking you through the story, giving you information, possibly provoking you to see the film or to feel the film in a way that hopefully the film, all of these things intended, all these things come together. That's kind of always sort of my creative goal.
I think it goes good together with thinking film as a collaborative or collective piece of art. I think that comes both together, and it is good if the music acts like another actor in the whole production, as everything else is doing it. Do you remind a favorite score that moved you or influenced you in a special way?
Yeah, I have one, and I've always given this answer. Before we spoke, I started to ask myself, why is it this one? And it's from around the 80s. It's Ennio Morricone's score to The Mission. It's a great score, and I'll talk about it. But first, I think that this is such a special score, as I think I could give you 10 great film scores that have meant a lot to me. But this one was before I did my very first film. So I think the scores that you see that blow you away when you're just forming your idea of this art form are really important to you. And I think the reason The Mission was so amazing is it really showed me, as a young artist, just how special music could be in a film, how it could be a storyteller, how it could elevate the material and give you a whole beautiful emotional arc and a musical arc to the story.
What should a composer pay attention to? In reaching the audience, I think this is one of the most important things the soundtrack should arrange. So what does he have to pay attention to?
I think you have to look at what the film is. What is the film saying? I also feel like it's extremely important not to judge your characters. Perfect example for me in my work is I've scored in one of the greatest villains of the last 10 or 20 years, you know, Frank Underwood in House of Cards, played by Kevin Spacey, who is, by definition, a very unlikable character, and his wife, Claire, played by Robin Wright. But really, the key to that music is not judging them. You write from that character's truth, from that character's experience. Ennio Morricone, in the ultimate way of making the film, the music a character, he used some of this really beautiful European sounds, like this beautiful oboe melody, the voices of Christendom, you know, the sort of liturgical voices. And he combined them with these sounds that we would maybe associate with South America, some of the Aztec, Inca sort of period sounds, you know, the wood flutes, the drums. And it was like this amazing stew, musical stew, that it created a sound world in which I would say the viewer is able to get lost. I guess when you say, what do you pay attention to? I think every film by definition is a collaborative medium and no film is perfect. But really, you find your way in writing a good score when you find out what the goal is in the film. Even if the acting isn't perfect or the set's a little weird or the dialogue's not written perfectly, what is the truth in there? And I feel like that's what you're trying to find. You're trying to find the universal, beautiful, timeless essence of a story and really enhance that, explode that, exaggerate it, really. A film, cinema is really an art form of exaggeration and sort of it's an art form of suspended disbelief. So how can we fool the audience, make them forget the outside world for 2 hours and just lose themselves in this story?
You just spoke about the different styles, the different national styles used in film music composition. So often there's a kind of difference between European sounds and maybe American sounds, folk sounds and so on. And or you arrange a symphonic score or you use varieties of popular music in your scores, for example. So what do you think, to what extent does film music reveal cultural differences or could reveal cultural differences? And what role does the style play in this context?
Yeah, well, it's fascinating. It still is. One of the things I love about film music is I've never had a director tell me, you can't put, you know, jazz with hip hop and Mozart or whatever, you know, like no one's ever said that because that's the whole art of film. And so I feel like as a composer, it's actually very creative. It's very free because there aren't a lot of rules. Like sometimes, you know, like in the way music is distributed and sold, record labels are very interested in putting everything into a category so that listeners can go, I want to hear this kind of music or that kind of music. And film is a little more expansive. Music is a language, and I feel like we live in such an eclectic time. Any listener can just click and randomly access anything. So in a way, I feel like the composer's choices have to be very specific and intentional. I think it's something you find as you're working through a film. You find out what the language of the film is, and I feel like its style is a huge part of it. Also, sound and sound color is a huge part of instrumentation. Is always a really important part of the film score. It's like, what instruments are you choosing? How do you arrange those instruments? So even within a given style, if it's basically a classical score or a theme-driven score, is it a chamber group or is it a big orchestra or is it just a couple instruments? All those choices become extremely important in terms of the way the film, the music interacts with the whole production.
That reminds me of a Michel Chion quote. He just said, film music is just a faux Esperanto. And I think this combines what you said about the multinational, multilingua of film music. Film music thought as a mashup. That's a good idea. I would grab it. I would take it with me.
Werdegang und Werk.
So we reach our next step and go on further on our path through your musical world. And let's talk a little bit more about your path into the world of music, the desire to compose music for films yourself. When did that arise? Did it arise at all? Or is your path to film music composition just a series of coincidences?
Probably a little bit of both. You know, I was a trumpet player growing up, and jazz trumpet was my first love as an instrumentalist. I also studied classical music. And I think, ironically, I think the moment at which I knew I was going to be a film composer, I didn't even know. But it was sitting in the trumpet section of the Oakland Youth Symphony Orchestra. And we had a great conductor and we were playing Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, which is an amazing piece of music. And I'm sitting in the middle of this sound just going, wow, this is incredible. Now, obviously, that is not a film score. That's a ballet. But it's very similar in the sense that it's programmatic music, it's telling a story, and it's doing it so creatively. That idea of music that was telling a story, it grabbed me. The idea of storytelling has been always a part of my aesthetic. The sort of more random part was, you know, life. You know, I went to Eastman School of Music, wonderful school, where we actually, in the last few years, started our own 2-year film music master's, which I'm really proud of, the Beale Institute for Contemporary Music and Media. When I was a student there, my mentor, when I was a senior in college, there was a film music class and I took it. So I learned I wrote my first music to picture. I thought, this is great. I loved it. I loved the choreography, the way music sort of interacted. And then again, strange Rochester connection, but before I graduated, I was introduced by a mentor of mine at the time to the directors, the filmmakers who would eventually go on to hire me to do my first film score. So it took them a few years to raise the money. But that movie's called Cheap Shots, starred Louis Zorich and David Patrick Kelly. And I'm thinking about it because we're actually going to have a screening, an anniversary screening later on this month in Rochester, New York, which I'm really looking forward to seeing because I haven't seen it in probably over 30 years. But one thing led to another. You know, as I got out of college, I was very active as a jazz trumpet player and recording artist. I made several solo records. But when we moved to California, it became more opportunities came my way. And it was obvious that I was really interested in this. So upon moving to Los Angeles in my 30s, that's when it sort of all started to take off. And I started to really get busy working and build a career doing what I love.
So you spoke about that you're a trained musician. You studied trumpet and also jazz trumpet, and you are known for your improvisational talent and your expertise in jazz music. And yes, also I think of your sense of musical timing, and I think this is indispensable in composing for the film. So maybe the two worlds together, do you think, is it even possible to separate these dimensions from one another?
If you're a jazz musician, I don't think. I mean, I think that those instincts, those artistic sort of sensitivities stay with you your whole life, you know? And really, I think the thing that really clicked for me when I started doing film was I immediately loved it, because just like when you play in a jazz group, it's not just about what you're doing. You're listening and responding to everything that's happening in the room in real time. And film composing is very much like that. I just feel like it's a very direct metaphor in the way that a score is one person in the band and you're playing along with the actors and the script and the scene. I've spent a lot of my time scoring movies that were really actor driven. And I think there's a reason for that, is that I love stuff. When you, going back to your earlier question about what do you pay attention to, I spend a lot of time studying actors and seeing their performance and trying to figure out how I can mesh in with that and not get in the way of it, but also sort of amplify it and elevate it and make it, give it a spin with sound that really rides along with whatever that a great actor is doing on screen.
So it's a very visual context or visual way to go on to music that you are having for you. When we speak about film music, we often speak about style. So with regard to the aesthetic language you speak, how would you describe your own musical style? For example, what musical influences have had an impact on you in terms of your compositional practice?
Yeah, it's pretty broad. It's, I think, always been quite personal. I've never wanted to sound like John Williams or Jerry Goldsmith or whoever, but obviously I've been influenced and loved the music of my mentors, and I've borrowed from all the great peoples, you know, very regularly. But when I think about my music, I think a lot about, if you think about it as a building, the thing I like to do with a musical piece is have the building be able to stand if you just have the basic outline of it. I think a lot about architecture, and it's almost like fractals in math, so that the sense that there's a structure, there's an idea, and sometimes I find it while I'm doing it, but I like a score when it feels like all of the pieces are part of this beautiful tapestry that somehow fit together. That, I think, implies a bit of a European sensibility of structure and voice leading and counterpoint. Then there's also the jazz side, which I love surprises. You know, one of my gripes about some film music is if it's too predictable, it makes me quite angry, because I feel like the element of drama is surprise. And so I try to write music that is not just simply, that doesn't lull you to sleep with its sort of repetitiveness, although repetition can be great in terms of ostinatos and even repeating themes. But I like the idea of something a little unexpected, a little type of turn that you didn't see coming. Those are the little musical moments that I often enjoy, the way something can surprise you musically, but all at the same time be satisfying. Writing film is really an art form of simplicity and limits, because as composers, we don't define the structure that we're given to. We're given a piece of film, and our job is to somehow, often in 2 minutes or less, make a statement, which I find to be a very challenging creative brief. I often say that it's easy. There's a big difference between simple and simple-minded.
Freistil,
You have recently released your album, The Paperline Checked, on Supertrain Records, and it comprises two works. First, The Paperline Checked. This is a work for soprano and orchestra, and the second is Things Unseen for string quartet. And we started the interview, and you just spoke about your impression or your inspiration of film music, and you said, okay, I try to take music as a figure, as another player in the web of film production. And Things Unseen tie the bow to our film music composition themes, I think, in that we don't see the music, but we listen to it. And we don't see only the music, but we also hear the sounds and the noises and so on. And all together, it makes it great, I think. And the libretto of this new album consists of a collage, I think, by your wife, Joan Beale. Is it right?
Yes.
Yeah. And utilizing texts and images sourced from your great-grandmother's memoir. And the work is musically organized as a cycle. So we have many, many things which come together in this piece or in this album. Does this correspond to your idea of collectiveness or collaborativeness, collaborative working processes, as we know them from film production?
Absolutely. In fact, my wife is also a wonderful singer. She's basically retired now. As a singer, she was very successful as a studio singer. And if you ever heard a dramatic operatic soprano in House of Cards, that was Joan singing. But I've always loved writing for the voice, and I've written a lot of works for choruses. I did a big piece for the LA Master Chorale a few years ago. And I think part of the reason I love writing for singers is you have text, you have a story. Hilo's an amazing performer. And I received this commission from the St. Louis Symphony to write a song for them. And I proposed the idea of a song cycle, which Leonard was open to, as he'd worked with Hilo before. And I had discovered these pages from my great-grandmother about over 10 years ago when my wife and I were moving, and they popped out of a memorabilia box. And I didn't have a text yet for the piece, and I thought about these pages. We went back and reread them, and it's just beautiful, some of the things she wrote about what happened to her. You know, she was a real pioneer woman who moved out to Idaho with her husband and young family. And tragically, her husband died while she was pregnant with her sixth child at a very young age. And so it's kind of like how she dealt with that hardship. And I felt like there was something really beautiful in the way she wrote about that. Some beautiful lines where after her husband dies in the garden outside of their little prairie home, she writes, she said, "I looked out at the garden. Everything looked this. Nothing had changed. I mean, I'm sorry. Nothing. Everything had changed. But it was still the same," is basically the gist of what she wrote. And it was this beautiful way of sort of looking out at the garden and realizing how different her life had just become and the perseverance she would need. Obviously, that's a very personal work, and Things Unseen is a little more universal. But, you know, I found with the performances we've given of the song cycle, it's been really moving to see people's reactions to it, whether they're young or old. It's definitely a special record to me because obviously people know my music as a film composer, and I hope other people that like my film music will maybe take a chance and reach out and give it a listen. I think you'll still hear the same composer in there. It's the same voice, but in a different context.
We've talked a lot about music in films now and also on your new orchestral works, but the acoustic level of films consists of much more than sounds, noises, voices, and so on. And you just said in the beginning that you're thinking it as a whole too. But what do you think of many younger colleagues today? Their approach to composing film music is differently, I think, and they do not see themselves explicitly as composers often, but as sound artists or sound designers. What do you think about it? And as the impression of digitalization and artificial intelligence, how do you think the self-image of the composer and especially of the film music composers changing?
Yeah, I think the idea of sound artists is very much a part of what we do. You know, I mean, probably the coolest example of that was Hildur's score for the Chernobyl miniseries a few years ago, where she went to this old reactor and actually sampled sounds and used that as part of the composition. I thought that was quite fascinating. And you watch that show, it's a great film. It's a great miniseries. And there's many times when you probably don't know if you're listening to music or you're listening to sound design, but it's doing what it's supposed to do, which is putting you in this very uneasy, tense, dramatic space. You know, I think the thing that's great about film is there's no rules. And as, you know, I think sound has always sort of been, it's felt like the stepchild or the sort of wayward, not the favorite child in cinema. Everything's always about the visual in cinema. It's all about how it looks and the CGI. But I'm really glad for these new emerging technologies like Atmos and all this stuff to really make us remember that film is an audiovisual medium. You only have to see a film without the music or without the sound work done to really know how important that is. Obviously, the whole art of sound design has become much more immersive and creative. And I love working on a project where I can really work closely with the sound designer in crafting the scene or crafting the sound of the scene. Every film is different, a different musical journey. I have a film, two films in Toronto next week. One of them is called The Grab, which is directed by Gabriella Cowperthwaite, who did Blackfish. Very political, fascinating documentary. And that was a really fun score because I'm more or less known. I'm known for more sort of literate type of writing, but I did a lot of electronic music and really uneasy sounds. It was really fun. I loved that sort of experimentation. The other film is called Raymond and Ray and stars Ethan Hawke. And this one was really fun because Ethan's character in the movie is a jazz trumpet player. And I got to write a piece that he actually plays in the scene. And there was a whole thing with the way we designed that sound because I recorded the trumpet before, obviously. But the sound people did an amazing job of really taking the sound of the trumpet that I'd recorded really dry with no reverb. And as the camera goes from wide shot to close shot, you hear the trumpet sort of in these different spaces. And it really felt like, okay, he's really playing that. I bought it. So it's people don't always realize all that goes into the experience in terms of sound. A sound of a scene and it's a sound of a film, and it's really, really involved. And sound designers are a huge part of that.
Zukunftsmusik.
So, where do you think film music composition is headed? Where do you see film music in 20 years, for example, aesthetically or production-wise, socially, culturally?
You know, of course, I have no idea. I hope it's as surprising as the last 20 years have been. You know, there's an answer for you. But there's an interesting trend that technology is really fueling something that I think is going to accelerate. And the idea of voices coming from unexpected places is really fascinating to me. I'll give you a perfect example. We mentioned, you know, I've worked with David Fincher. On House of Cards. And David has worked a lot with Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. People know Trent Reznor as the guy, he's a guy who did Nine Inch Nails. But him and Atticus write really great music, really cool music. And so through their relationship with David, they have this amazing palette of creativity. So I think the technology is, there's going to be more people like that that sort of slide into it from unexpected places. Obviously, we're living in an era where this sort of sense of social equality has really become a theme. And I think that's really important because it's always kind of been awkward and obvious to me that like it's a behind the camera job, but it's been primarily men that do this. Like, why is that? And why is it just mostly white men? Well, there's a whole lot of cultural reasons for that in terms of opportunity and class and education and all that. But the idea of more voices, the best voices from the whole population, I think that's going to be a real story. We're always going to tell the same stories. You know, we're still just sitting around the campfire. So there's certain universals, which I think will always persist. But it's the way in which we tell the stories that I think will be hopefully especially fascinating and amazing in the next 20 years.
Yeah. And I'm a friend of the great musicians like Trent Reznor. For our listeners, Godfather of Industrial Rock and Atticus Ross, of course, and also Tom York, for example, or Thomas Bangalter in France, the part of Daft Punk. All these great musicians are moving further to film music or to formats in any media and in any context where they can give us their music, their idea of sound, I think. This leads me to my last question. Then we have finished our small interview, our pass through your world of music. And I will give you the space to give us a last word on your film music compositions. Which one do you think is the best?
Well, there's two, really. The one from the present, the more recent history, you know, it's like House of Cards was an amazing opportunity for me and probably I don't know if I'll ever have that kind of a palette creatively to play on. Just I'm really extremely proud of that work. But if I had to pick just one, it's again kind of like the early days kind of thing. But I feel like the score I did for Ed Harris's film Pollock back in 2000 is one that I feel like that sort of was everything I was hoping to do as an artist. It was telling a story. It was being musically daring as you can when sometimes you're young and full of bravura and confidence. And it's an amazing film. And it's sort of, for me, that sort of brought together a lot of ideas that I was thinking about and still haunt me to this day, ironically. But it was minimalism and Americana, painting, psychology, manic depressive things, and also joy. I'm proud of the fact that I think that music is beautiful and joyful, but not sentimental. I think part of what I've tried to do in my work, no matter what kind of film I'm doing, is to have the music really make you feel something, but not make the audience feel like they're pushed into feeling something. That's always been my goal, is to write music that somehow makes living, makes a few hours of your day a little less boring. Or just lifts your spirit in some way, or just makes you feel something or discover something in yourself. I guess that's probably what my goal has been as an artist and continues to be.
Hopefully, I think it works out. So, Jeff, we are at the end of our interview. I thank you very much for your time and this great insight into your world of music. It was a pleasure for me.
Thank you so much, Franziska.
Das war Audiovisionen, der Podcast zu Film, Musiken, Sounds. Diesmal mit Franziska Kollinger und Jeff Biel.